first case in our calendar is 97-2020, State of Ohio versus Devel Chin, Mr. Ferro.
When you say there isn't evidence, overwhelming evidence of guilt, is your position that the testimony of Washington, the fellow who was with him the night, is not, I guess that seems to be pretty good evidence. Is it that you're pointing to his difficulty at the lineup where he told it later to the officers?
There are a number of problems with Marvin Washington's testimony at this trial. First and foremost, as you pointed out, the fact that he didn't identify Mr. Chin as a client. Second of all, in his original police statement, when Washington went to his arrest, he told the police he arrived downtown between 6 and 7. He told Major McKeever he took the bus at 6:45. The alibi evidence presented shows that Devel Chin has independent witnesses establishing downtown taking a test until about 7:15. And he got on the bus going to the west side at 7:45. He got off the bus sometime before around 8:30 and then went home and his mother testified that he was home all evening. But certainly, the independent witnesses who have known the case can relate that he was not downtown at Courthouse Square drinking beer at the time Marvin Washington said that he met up with him and that he was already partly at least intoxicated. So, there's that inconsistency with Marvin Washington. Marvin Washington also said that the conference was taller than him, that he was about 5'7", and Marvin Washington is 5'5", and the record establishes that he is also about 5'5". Furthermore, the independent witnesses to the actual crime, Stacey Dyer is the most compelling in that she was seen within five, or she said that the victim and the shooter were about 6 inches apart. And the coroner's testimony establishes the victim was 5'10", and that Devel Chin was 5'5". Yet, Stacey Dyer testified that there was no noticeable difference in their height, and that they were just below the freeway. Given this information, and the other eyewitnesses consistently described the man who was taller than Devel Chin could have been, we had to call into question the testimony of Marvin Washington.
Well, Washington said he was there. Do you dispute that?
No, Marvin Washington did say at testimony in trial that the man was Devel Chin.
Okay, so, no, but I mean he, Washington, says,
yes,
I was there.
His involvement.
Washington was there.
Right.
And the man is dead.
Yes.
You don't dispute that Washington was there?
No, I don't.
Are you saying Washington was the killer?
We're not saying Washington was the killer. We're saying that probably the killer was some other man, Tony, who simply not identified.
Oh, so Washington didn't know who he was with?
Well, we think that he only knew that this was a man named Tony, and he didn't know the last name. This wasn't a really good friend that he had known for years. And the information he gave on how to knew this friend also didn't pan out. He told Detective Lance that this man used to be with a friend of Henry Walker and Stephanie Woods. He was Stephanie Woods' boyfriend. When Henry Walker and Stephanie Woods were questioned, they didn't know who he was talking about. So there just are a number of problems with Marvin Washington, and in the evidence proper of resentencing, we know that his IQ is 48. And an IQ of 48 is very, very low, as this court is well aware. We have many death row appellants appearing before us who are borderline mentally retarded, and they're in the low 70s. This is 48 based on the legal court records. And I think this gives us the answer to the question that everyone has, well, why would Marvin Washington come in and say if somebody knew it wasn't? Well, the photo ID was given and it was never initialized, which is the core practice in Montgomery County. It was exactly what Christopher Wood did when he made a photo ID. Yes, he did make photo ID according to the Texas Lights before the
award did also.
Yes, both of them did. Yes.
And other than the fact that he didn't initial it, you haven't raised it as any claim of error or unaccountable.
No, but I think that does give a challenge to his credibility. And I think that we're not saying there.
Is that not an evidence of trial that they did a multiple photo ID line?
Yes, it did come out of trial. And one thing.
The photo of person in the line of credit is very certain.
Yes, the jury could have read that, could have judged that credibility. But what I think is important to note is that this is a close case. It's not overwhelming evidence of guilt. It's not right now that there is absolutely no evidence of guilt. We feel that there are big problems with Marvin Washington's testimony, and that it was certainly open to question and was asked at trial. But given the state's vulnerability with Marvin Washington being the linchpin of their case, that is why we have this overreaching and the errors that I'm talking about today, such as the testimony that Bell Chin was seen in the law office the day after the composite appeared in the newspaper. Further, the state also argued overzealously, saying that to the jury that go ahead, let him free, but we know he's guilty and that there's nothing more we can do under the law to show you he's guilty, but we know. This type of argument has been condemned by this court in State versus Keenan, and this type of analysis where evidentiary errors occurred merited reversal in State versus Johnson for precisely the reason that I'm propounding here today, that there is less than the evidence of guilt. There has to be severe doubt when consistent eyewitness reports tell us that the man was taller than Marvin Washington when developed him was. And this is most striking in the testimony of Davy Dyer. He sees a 5-inch difference, or who should have seen, if it was developed him, a 5-inch difference between the killer and the victim. And yet she testifies there was no noticeable difference in height.
Were all these problems brought to the jury's attention?
Yes, they were brought to the jury's attention.
So the jury heard all this, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
And that's their job. That's the job of the jury to determine who to believe.
Yes, they did.
You say the jury was misguided somehow?
Yes, by the state overreaching and by the irrelevant evidence. Furthermore, the defense was hamstrung.
But the jury could have rejected that.
The jury could have.
Well, they didn't.
The state has the burden of proving that the errors committed at this trial were harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's the analysis this court did in State versus Johnson, and the analysis this court must conduct today. And given the fact that prejudicial testimony about Chin being in the law office was admitted and that the state sought to admit it for the sole purpose of showing guilt because it was in the law office, was a prejudicial error in this case that was not harmless given the fact.
Was that argued to the jury?
It was not allowed to be argued to the jury that he was in the law office, but that is the reason the state presented it, and the state insisted that that be guilty to Chin. The defense offer simply allowed Billy Cox to testify that he was a receptionist in an office. And that wasn't good enough for them, which tells us exactly why they wanted it there, that they wanted this interest to kill the fact that he was seeing lawyers the day after. And they were very careful about the timing.
I guess I'm just...
Go ahead.
I guess I'm wondering about the instance of guilt.
It doesn't seem intuitive to me that somebody who just murdered someone would go to a lawyer's office the next day. Is there any evidence that that's usually what happens? Or?
No, but what it is that we have the inference that he went to a lawyer's office the day after he was conscious, the day led to be him, appeared in the newspaper, and that the very next day he went to a law office. And the state certainly, trained lawyers, came to that conclusion and argued it before the trial court. We can't know beyond a reasonable doubt that the jury didn't reach that same conclusion. We're not trained in the law, and we don't know the myriad reasons why a person might be using a lawyer other than a criminal offense. If the state jumps to that conclusion, there's certainly every reason to believe that the jury jumps to that conclusion, and that error, along with the other errors present in the trial, merit reversal.
What about this other person, Moore? How long was Washington and Tony at Moore about?
There were two different versions. According to Washington, it was about 15 minutes. According to Moore, 30 minutes to 45. It's undisputed, however, that Moore was looking in from the driver's side, that Tony was on the passenger side, the lighting wasn't good. And in the police report by Major Weaver, something that essentially is not allowed to use in cross-examining Ward, Ward testified that he didn't pay any attention to the person that happened.
But he did subsequently identify it.
Yes, he did. However, in that original police report, he said that he didn't pay any attention to him. And notably, there's no description. And in any police investigation, when we have an eyewitness to somebody who might be the perpetrator, there is at least they ask him for a description.
Well, how did Ward identify him? Through pictures or lying?
He did both.
He did both.
Yes, he did both.
And he picked out Ken.
And he picked out Ken at both times. Yes, he did. However, as I said, this is another crucial error that you're pointing out. Ward was important testimony, therefore the right to confront him and use his prior statements to impeach him was essential for the defense, yet they weren't allowed to do it. This type of error, given the problem, all hinged on the critical aspects of the case that needed to be carefully examined by the defense team, and they weren't allowed to. It's notable that the prosecution in this case chose not to follow the local rule that every other trial had been following in Montgomery County up to that time. This type of state overreaching just another example. If they were so confident of their case and so sure of Marvin Washington's testimony, why didn't they go ahead and let the state or the defense test their case in the way it should have? But at every moment where the defense tried to use any information it had, the state objected. The state did not want the defense to present a composite of the picture of the killer that Marvin Washington had done to the jury while the belt had been in the courtroom witness so that they could make this visual comparison. Instead, they wanted that conclusion drawn by Shirley Cox and wanted the defense to know that Shirley Cox had drawn this conclusion, when such a conclusion is certainly irrelevant. And I ask this court, all of the members, to go into the record, look at the composite, see the long, rather thin face of the person drawn there, with the high cheekbones sort of drawn in cheek. Then look at the photos of the lineup of the Bell Chin, where we see a much rounder face and a plump aspect and rather large bulging eyes. It simply doesn't match. And that would have been more apparent to the jury if they'd been able to look at both and make a comparison.
Did you discuss them in the third party at the very beginning where they're talking in the car between Bobby Fisher? You can't mention that this error is exclusive evidence, but I didn't see, and I couldn't make the connection because this person was spoken to other way before it happened. So how is that relevant and how is that prejudicial on that?
Well, first of all, it's relevant in that it contradicts Marvin Washington's testimony, in which he said he met up with Isabel Chin in his original statement and the trial, that they went around drinking beer, went to a carry out, all of these things, never once mentioned that they were hanging out with a third person. If that information had been given to the defense early enough, that defense maybe could have conducted an investigation, found that third person, and perhaps identified more conclusively who this Tony was, and disputed Marvin Washington's claim.
When did you make about the third person?
This was in Gary Wellsworth, the surviving victim's statement to the police. I think it's the third person with whom we've been subsequently thrown off in the late month. So I didn't say being under arrest, but if you're above, we're called the three of them talking together. Saw them hanging around. So at least at some point in time, there was a third person. And it, you know, it could be this type of evidence may have led to nothing, but it took another thing, another problem in Marvin Washington's statement. There was a third person that he never mentioned. There was, he said the man was taller than him. He was. Everybody else who saw the two together said there was a noticeable difference in height, but there wasn't. Gary Wells, the surviving victim, could not identify Mr. Chin, even though he thought he could identify them based on their voice, and he heard the voice at the lineup, and yet picked somebody else. The state then, instead of simply letting them see, had to go ahead and tell the jury during closing arguments that this person couldn't have done the crime because the text might have told you he was in jail. And such a fact was never in evidence, so it wasn't allowed. This is just another example of the type of argument where the state sought to tell the jury more than was presented to them so that they would err on the side of caution and convict a dangerous man off the street.
The major part of your argument thus far is really on the identification of the defendant.
Right.
A bill of particulars sometimes helps that, does it not?
Yes, it does.
Would you please discuss your proposition of law number 12, which starts on page 107 of your brief, with regard to the demand for a bill of particulars, and specifically, is Criminal Rule 7 and the statute mandatory?
The bill of particulars should have been given in this case because the defendant was presenting an alibi, which implies that we need a precise time so we know exactly what he's charged with and what time he must account for. In those situations, the court has held that it is mandatory. It is a matter of discretion normally, but when there's a case where a bill of particulars should be given because the defendant is going to present a defense against it, that's another error in this case.
Do you read the statute and or the rule as being mandatory?
I don't have the exact language of the statute. My reading of the facts in this case, because of the court's case law, I can state for Sellers and state for Lawrence.
Well, you indicate in your brief that there's just no question here that a bill of particulars had to be given, and of course the trial judge said, well, it's long past the time, you have to do it 21 days after arraignment, but the rule and the statute go on and say, but not later than 7 days before trial.
Right.
Was your request within the 7 day period?
Yes, it was before the 7 day period, yes.
And all, was there anything else that I've missed where the trial judge, because it seems all the trial judge said is, well, they've given you enough to identify what's happened here.
Yes.
Did he say anything else?
The trial judge? No. The trial judge? The trial judge denied a number of very standard motions in the case. This bill particularly.
How long before trial did you demand a bill?
I don't have that information like this right here. I'm not sure that the answer is there.
But wouldn't that dovetail into your argument about identification? Because you're saying not only was it not our client, he wasn't even anywhere around and didn't even know these people.
Yes, and that information was given in the form of Marvin Washington's original statement to the court.
August 1st, 1989.
August 1st, 1989. And that the information, the defense was pretty much aware of the information based on the statement given by Marvin Washington, although that statement changed at trial subsequently.
So if you knew it, you weren't prejudiced by a lack of a bill?
Probably not in this case. It's an example, though, of where the state argued against a very standard motion that the trial court failed to sustain it, just as in the local rules, which require a full discovery, the trial court refused to order it in this case, even though it been ordered in every other case in Montgomery County, and they simply chose to treat the Belchin differently than all other capital defendants that came before him.
So you just assert proposition of law number 12 to show cumulative prejudice? But you're conceding, are you, that the denial of a bill after a proper demand, if you have full information, is not error, standing as independently?
It may be error, it may not be prejudicial error, standing independently. And in this case, we don't know exactly when defense counsel, they, at this point in time, they were probably aware of Marvin Washington's statement. They weren't aware of his testimony, however, until the moment of trial. And that is when it was told, when the time swings from 6 to 7 up to 7:15. And that still is accounted for under the Bell's alibi. He could not have met up with Marvin Washington at that time. The trial court even thought that that information was irrelevant to the trial. It elected to go ahead and allow the defense to present it. But still, he told the jury that they thought that it was, the trial court thought it was irrelevant that Chin was anywhere except where he was at around 11:30 at the time of the actual crime. Certainly in this case, where there is underwhelming evidence of guilt, this court has reversed to avoid the conviction and execution of an innocent man. Executions have become a reality in Ohio, and this court must assume the role of assuring that no innocent person is executed. The facts presented at trial are less than overwhelming evidence of guilt. There is, however, multiple trial errors that are very prejudicial and encourage the jury to convict, to err on the side of caution, and to assume guilt based on developing presence in the law. Given those errors were recognized by the court below and must be recognized by this court must find that the state cannot prove that these errors were harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, and must reverse the Bellevue's conviction.
Thank you, Mr. Farrell. Ms. Ingram.
Dear Judges Court, as soon as court is filed with the court this morning, we ask this court to affirm the judgment of court of appeals to the public service death according to law upon date of the death of the aggravated murder of Brian Jones. Gary Wilmore, he's found the actual robbery. In this
the admission to the hospital. He did have a total stranger who claimed to be a person, looked at a composite, and said, oh, that must be Kent. And that person stood on the witness stand. That person, not a witness to the crime, that person needs to take anybody off the street and say, okay, this is a defendant, here's a composite, do they look alike? And that's the ultimate issue to the jury when they look at the composite.
Another, to me, maybe even more important person than that, did Christopher Ward specifically identify the appellant?
Yes.
From a lineup? Was his identification from the lineup consistent with what he did in the courtroom?
Yes.
Well, they had spent a half hour together at some friend's house before that. I think it was at somebody else's house. A friend of Ward's house. The house of a friend of Ward. It doesn't make any difference, but they were there for a half hour He was there talking to both of them. Now, you're absolutely certain he identified the appellant. Yeah, I understand what Washington did. He was still in the cover-up mode at that point. Disagree that a proper demand for a bill of particulars, it's mandatory that it be given. Notwithstanding your argument about Sellards and whatever the other case was that they already knew.
I think that
is it Excuse me, go ahead. And see, that's what bothers me, because we have these rules, and you say it's mandatory, but we didn't do it, and there should be no reversal because so we violated that rule. We're sorry, but is it practice in your office to deny bills of particulars?
It is not, but it is also practice in my office to always try to comply with local.
I understand. That's a whole different issue, but I'm talking about the bill of particulars now. Would you, perish the thought, if you were ever on the other side, would you ever try a criminal case, much less a death case, without a bill of particulars? Let me tell you why I asked the question, because I never did and never would. You always demand a bill of particulars, don't you? Don't you routinely get a demand for a bill of particulars in every criminal case?
No, because
of your open discovery.
So, rarely, actually, I would say rarely, but
we can at least agree that Rule 70 and, what is it, 2901, 2941-07 seem to be mandatory in their language, don't they?
Yes.
Okay, now how do we go about enforcing the rules instead of just every time saying, okay, it's harmless error, it's something that they should have done, but it really, the evidence is overwhelming. Whether we like the rule or not, how do we get it enforced? Because we're seeing a lot of this. In this case, because that's such a clear one to me. Concede all that, but is that your judgment? The rule says you shall give a bill of particulars whenever it's requested.
The rule also requires
where does it say that? A bill of, where does it say that? It says the prosecuting attorney shall furnish the defendant with a bill of particulars, setting up specifically the nature of the offense charged and the conduct of the defendant alleged to constitute the offense. Not if it, unless they already have the information, or if it's not prejudicial, it doesn't say that in my rule. I concede that. And all I'm asking is, how do we enforce the rules?
Save a little 8 minutes of your time.
mention the testimony of Christopher Ward, who maybe has seen the perpetrator for as much as half an hour and sat on the other side of the car in a dark street talking to the Marvin Washington sitting on the driver's side. It's more than a technicality when the defense is not allowed to keep a key state witness. It's a substantial right. The Sixth Amendment right to confront the witnesses against you. This is not a small technical error. The defense has a Sixth Amendment right to impeach a key state witness. And in this very weak case, it cannot be said that that was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. Furthermore, you had questions about the relevance of Shirley Cox's testimony. Certainly, the jury had to make that decision, not Shirley Cox. And the fact that in the first 21 lines of her testimony, it said four times that they were in the law office belies the state's assertion now that that didn't get before the jury and that the prejudice didn't occur here. The state was not allowed to argue it, but it was allowed to present it nonetheless. And the state had come to that conclusion as lawyers trained in the law. There's no reason to believe the jury didn't come to exactly that same inference. The state mentioned the litany of tests of witnesses who saw the perpetrator and Marvin Washington together that night. Jack Couch, Gary Wellborn, Stacy Dyer. None of these three people were able to make a positive identification, but all three consistently told us that they saw Marvin Washington and Belichin together and that their height was substantially different. The actual numbers differ, but they were able to make a comparative analysis that tells us that this was not a Belichin that night. And as I reiterated, Stacy Dyer is the most important in that we have at least a 5-inch differential between the victim standing up being shot and the shooter shooting that victim in the back of the arm that eventually reached somebody. That is uncontroverted, and the state has nothing to hold up to it but Marvin Washington and Christopher Ward. Christopher Ward, they wouldn't let the state, the defense, conduct it. And Marvin Washington, although it wasn't before the jury, his IQ of 48, this court, in its role of assuring that no innocent man is executed, must take that into consideration. That a man of a 48 IQ is certainly open to suggestibility. And even though he was told just before the lineup that the witnesses that they've never saw IQ
is taken into consideration,
it is in the record that it was proper to put in the record after the sentencing. And certainly part of, if not on judging whether the errors were harmless at trial, certainly this court is in the review, it should be considered. But even without that information, the state of what case is far less than overcoming.
Your argument goes strictly to the members of the case of the
Well, we certainly have made penalty-based issues that I believe are very compelling and warrant reversal as well. But in this case, the review of the facts failed to convince that the Belichin did. And it would be a very great injustice to make him spend the rest of his life in prison for a crime he didn't commit. The trial here simply wasn't fair. The defense was hamstrung from the beginning when they asked for a bill particular, asked for local discovery rule to be enforced, after the irrelevant testimony be kept out, and after the prosecutor not make the preliminary argument. Everywhere along the line, the trial court failed to enforce these rules that are in place for the very reason that we don't want an innocent man to be convicted of a crime they didn't commit. That's why we have these rules. That's why we don't, why evidence rule 401 and 403 are there. The Shirley Coxes can't come in and say he was in the law office and I think it looked like him, when that is of absolutely no relevance, and that's a jury conclusion. And then the state, at the same time, says, no, don't let them see the profit until they're back in the jury room when the Belichin is there. This is a state that is more confident that they've got the right person. And so they have to try and force it and be overzealous and argue much harder than they otherwise would have. In such a case, from errors that are committed and admitted here by the state, admitted below, are not harmless beyond a reasonable doubt. This case deserves a new trial, but there's a very good chance that Gerald Chin, that the Belgian, would be acquitted.
Thank you, Mr. Farrell. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.